Session number 911, Phyllis Hopkins, Reel 1.
Can you tell me where you were born, first of all, Mrs. Hopkins?
I was born in Rangoon, Burma.
And this was because your family had moved from England to Burma. Could you tell me how this came about?
My father had been in the army, in the Indian Army, and he liked the East so much, he bought his discharge and got work in the Forestry Commission. And family were born, all my family, brothers and sisters were born in Burma. But I didn't live in Rangoon. As a very young child, Dad moved to the Shan States. So I had my first few years in the Shan States and then moved up to Maimyo, Upper Burma.
This was in the hills?
This was, yes. It was, Maimyo was the summer government seat. There was a government house and government officials all moved up from Rangoon to Maimyo for the summer.
And can you tell me a little bit about your father's career in the Indian Army?
Not very much, because he actually wasn't serving in the regular forces when the family arrived. It was just he continued to be on the reserve of officers and went for training every 2 years. But didn't do his training at home, so I don't know a lot about his actual service. But in the event of war, of course, he was on the call-up list, being on the reserve.
Where did he do his training?
He went either to Rangoon or across to India for, I think it was a brief 3 months training.
Had he been an officer in the Indian Army?
Yes, he had. He was a major, and he just kept that honorary rank throughout. And of course, on the outbreak of war, he was immediately called up and went to India, where he served throughout the war.
Do you know what regiment he served with?
In the Royal Indian Army Service Corps, which was transport.
And as a family, did you have very much contact with the British Army in Burma? Were your friends, were the friends of the family mostly civilians or army personnel?
Well, mostly civilians, but we did have contact with the army. The army were there if we wanted to have contact with them, but it was chiefly civilians.
And was there a cantonment at Maimyo?
Yes, there was. There was always a regiment, a British regiment, stationed in Maimyo. They did a 2-year tour to Maimyo, and I think they added a bit to the life in Maimyo. There were a lot of people weren't very keen on socializing with army people. Why, I don't know, but that was so then.
What type of social activities were held? Were there things run by the army, like dances?
Yes, dances, swimming gymkhanas, sports days. That's about all. And I think as my father had army connections, we got on the invitation list. That's how we became involved. And I think always as the regiments, even when I was a very small child, as the regiments moved backwards and forwards, I think my parents always did attend social functions with the army, at the army, either officers' mess or the sergeants' mess.
Was it common for civilian girls in Maimyo to marry soldiers then?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't was, in fact, it was a bit frowned upon before the last war. I was married in 1935, and I think I was, possibly as far as I know, I think I was the first girl from there to marry a serving man, because the regulations were rather strict. A man had to be over a certain age before he could marry. He had to get permission to marry to get his wife onto the strength of the regiment. And being in the East and born, the man was always asked to produce his fiancée's birth certificate. And of course, immediately saw I was born in Rangoon, and then the parents' birth certificates were asked for. Even though the regiment knew my parents, this came from records, I think. And after approving of the birth certificates, I presume permission was given to get married.
So what the army was looking for, really, was the racial question, was it?
I think so, yes. It was quite strong then.
And would permission have been not forthcoming if you'd have been a Burman or an Anglo-Indian?
Oh, no, because a couple of Anglo-Burmese girls did marry servicemen, but they weren't given any marriage allowance, they weren't given quarters. In fact, they just weren't recognised at all. So they had a very, very hard time of it.
Did you have to be interviewed by the army yourself before you married?
I wasn't, but my parents were.
Would that be by the commanding officer?
Yes, but as it happened, they did know each other. But however, that formality had to be gone into. So when it was all approved, we had a regimental wedding, which was, I think, the first ever again. All army personnel were in uniform. My father wore uniform as well, because at that time I think he was just about to be called up for his reserve 3 months training, so because that was the only time he was able to wear uniform. Or whether he got permission actually to wear it for that wedding, I'm not too sure, but it was a regimental wedding.
Did they have any special ceremonies?
You know, after the church wedding, there was a little guard of honour outside the church. We walked under a archway of swords, and my husband's colleagues and the sergeant's mess attached ropes to the car, and we were pulled for down the hill before being sent off. And at the reception, the regimental band played. It was quite an honour, really, to have this.
And was your husband expected to be on duty straight away afterwards, or did he get some leave?
No, he had a week's leave. We were allocated a quarter immediately, so we had a week honeymoon and moved straight into army quarters.
Whereabouts did you spend the honeymoon?
We went up to the Gotake. It was a big gorge, a big bridge. It was rather a beauty spot in Upper Burma, and they always had a rest house. We used to always call it a dak bungalow, D-A-K bungalow, and it was a rest house, and there were facilities there, restaurant facilities.
What does dak mean?
Rest, I think. Sort of a rest house.
Did you have to get the permission of the authorities to use these bungalows?
No, you just made reservation. They had them in various parts in Burma, and if you were travelling around, that's where... They weren't hotels. perhaps an old-fashioned motel. But very comfortable, well-furnished, and servants, there was food there, you didn't have to take anything with you.
Did you travel by motor car?
No, by train. We didn't have a car, we went by train, and the bridge was a rail over the bridge, very, very high. In fact, it used to be said if there was an eighth wonder of the world, that should have been it. Quite a frightening sensation going over it. It absolutely swayed. And it was very pretty all round, very lovely walks. Climate was very temperate, very pleasant.
Can you tell me about how you were allotted married quarters? Did you have any choice?
And not at that time. We were very fortunate. They were building new quarters. And we were allocated one of these. I presume the man applies for quarters, and we moved into a new one, which we were very, very lucky.
And how many rooms would you have?
It was quite a large house. It was a detached house. That was unusual, but the new ones that were built like that. We had three bedrooms, a drawing room, a dining room, bathroom, and the kitchen wasn't in the house. It was, I should think, 20, 25 yards away, and it was always called the cookhouse. That's where the cook did all the cooking and carried the food backwards and forwards from there. That actually was the thing, all houses, civilian houses, my home. The kitchens weren't built in the house, but they were under a covered way, but the army didn't have a covered way to the kitchen.
What method of power did they have for the cooking?
They used charcoal. Yes, it's strange to say, I hardly ever went into the kitchen to supervise or to see how the cook was getting on. I used to leave it entirely to him. Possibly, I think, because I'd been brought up like that, I left it to the servants, but possibly other wives coming out from England for the first time perhaps would have supervised a bit more.
So you felt perfectly at ease about the question of hygiene?
Yes, I did, yes.
Did you fall sick?
Only once, soon after we were married, both my husband and I, we had malaria. And immediately the army investigated where we'd got this from, and they found a little stagnant pool some distance from the house, and that's where we'd got our mosquito bites from. But apart from that one instant, no, we've never, ever been sick. Kept very good health.
So you didn't get any intestinal complaints?
No,
or
never.
Food poisoning or anything?
No, never. Actually, when I say I didn't supervise the kitchens, I think the cooks knew very well that if they fell below standard, the army would be on them. I think the army had periodical inspections.
Of the private kitchens?
Of the kitchens, yes. And the cooks who were employed with army people, I think, were used to that, because as the army families left and we were replaced, those servants usually try to get re-employment with the new people coming in. So the outgoing always gave a reference, if it was a good servant. If it wasn't, of course, he got a bad reference. But I never had any trouble. I was very lucky.
How many servants did you have?
We had two servants. We had a cook And we had an indoor man, we called him Bearer, and he always looked after my husband's uniform. For the various duties he had, my husband would just say, oh, I'm on this duty or that duty, and the bearer knew immediately what dress he'd have to wear, and he kept his uniform absolutely tip-top, the leatherware cleaned, and he even sorted the cleaning of the khaki drill. I never saw to any of that. The bearer did all that. In fact, he knew all about it. So if there was a parade, my husband would just arrive, and there was all the equipment laid out just to get into. They were very, very efficient. And he also did a bit of housework it was to do. But the very sort of the cleaning of toilets and things were done by the sweepers. They were the only ones who would do that. And the army sent them round. They weren't employed personally. They came round daily and cleaned toilets and emptied dustbins and so on.
Did you have a garden, a compound?
We did, yes. Very small one.
Did you look after that yourself? Or did you have a servant for that?
No, I think the army sent two or three gardeners round and just kept them tidy. We could go out and plant and work in them, but the army just kept them tidy for us. But we had a very, very small one, so it wasn't bothersome at all.
Did you call the servants by their names, or did you call them bearer and cook?
No, we just called them cook and bearer.
Did you use the word cook? Or did you use an Indian
cook
word?
No, we used the word cook.
Did you find...
And they spoke English very well. I didn't have to speak in their language. Though I did understand it. If they had spoken to me or if they didn't understand, I could explain to them in Hindustani. But there wasn't a need. Their English was quite good.
Were the servants Indians or Burmans?
Indians. Indians in Burma, the Burmese didn't go in for domestic work.
So these were Indians who were resident in Burma rather than Indians who were brought across from India by the army?
Oh yes, yes, there were a lot of Indians resident in Burma then.
And how did you pay these servants? Did you pay your cook through the bearer, or did you pay them individually?
Individually. Once a week. It was a set time. Forgotten now when my husband got his weekly pay, and it was on that day the servants would come and we just pay them.
Did the servants live near you, or on your compound, or where?
Not in the army. No, they lived out in their own homes. But as a civilian in my home as a child, the gardens, the compounds were enormous. And we all had what we call the servants' quarters. They were very, very good houses. And our servants lived in these houses. The house owner just provided them. And they were expected if you were employed, because we had many more servants in a big household, and they always expected accommodation. And the servants' quarters were excellent. They were properly built houses. And they lived on in the compound, but they didn't ever make themselves seen. But there were so many trees in the garden, in the compound, that they were quite sheltered.
Did the women and children of the families also act as servants?
The wife sometimes, but just depended on what she was. We, as a child, at home, we had quite a number of servants. Even the gardener, which was Nepalese. He wasn't married. He had a quarter as well. We had a gardener, we had cook and a bearer, we had a houseboy. Had two nannies for the family, a very large family. And they all had quarters provided. But we didn't live in that style in the army.
Did you find the servants trustworthy?
Yes, very. They loved becoming part of the family, though we didn't mix with them. But when, if there was a birth in their family, oh, they loved to bring you the new baby. They liked to be involved very much. They were trustworthy.
So there was never any question of anything being stolen or anything of that kind?
Well, I think it happened, but I'd not experienced it. I think it did happen. There must have been bad amongst the good, but on the whole, they were trustworthy because they knew very well they'd get the sack on the spot and they wouldn't get employment again.
Did the cook purchase the food, or did you purchase the food from the market?
Mostly the cook did. I remember once I did try, thinking, well, I could perhaps do it better. He was perhaps getting a little on the side. So I went shopping, but I did so badly, I handed over to him immediately.
Did you have to haggle in the market, or were the prices marked?
Oh, no, you did have to haggle. I think the shopkeepers enjoyed it. Never paid the price asked.
Did you find that you could be easy with the servants around the house? Could you talk freely with your husband, or did you find that you were inhibited when the servants were around in any way?
No, I wasn't aware then of being inhibited at all, to talk quite freely. And if we were entertaining, the servant was always hovering, serving food or serving the drinks. No, we weren't aware of keeping anything back.
Did you find that their work needed very much close supervision? I mean, did they have to be treated firmly, or could you rely on them to keep their work up to a good standard without that kind of pressure?
I didn't have to do much supervision at all. But I think it did happen. I think it depended on the servant. But on the whole, no. We did rely very much on our servants to see us through everything. And I think they knew this too, so we were very, very loyal.
Did you ever have to dismiss any servants?
I didn't, no.
Coming back to the married quarters, you said that they were provided by the army. Did the army also provide the furniture and furnishings for the bungalow, or did you have to provide those yourselves?
No, they were completely furnished, adequately furnished. The beds, tables, chairs, curtains, and bare utensils too, cooking utensils, crockery, very plain stuff, but nevertheless it was adequate. You could move from one quarter. When we moved from station to station, you moved into a fully furnished house or bungalow. In India they were all bungalows, they weren't houses. They were very, very different to the ones in Burma. They were in terraces, the bungalows, and you had a very long veranda, front and back. Because the climate was so very different there, I think possibly for the heat we had these very wide, long verandas. I can't remember how many bungalows to a terrace. We had an end one, so we weren't cooped in at all.
So the Burmese bungalow didn't have a veranda?
It was a detached. They had houses in Burma. They were detached. Just a small veranda. And there was always an outside staircase as well. And that was chiefly used by the servants. They didn't use your indoor staircase. They used the back, the outdoor one.
What would be your daily routine as an army wife in both Burma and India? Could you take me through a typical day about what time you'd get up, what you would do during the day, and so on?
In Burma, I was just an army wife for just a year, and I didn't have to rely on army friends because I had my home there, had my friends there. It was always early rising. It was quite a social day. My husband would do a duty before breakfast and come home, have breakfast. And in the meantime, I'd given any orders to the cook for the day's meals if we were having any visitors or if we were going to be out. And from then onwards, the day was free. We had a very carefree life. We always had cycles. We'd cycle a lot, visit friends, play bridge, swimming. Very carefree. But India was a wee bit different. We had to get to know people. We were more involved with the army. And in Lucknow, it was a very large garrison town, there were four other regiments there, so there was quite a lot of visiting going on. Each barracks had its own swimming pool. We were very keen on swimming. We always had a cycle, played tennis a lot.